Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us, and enjoy the show.
Welcome to episode 24 of For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-host for the journey of all things fermentable. So, what's going on, Chris?
Hey, what's going on? This weekend was pretty freaking awesome. I want to do a giant thank you and shout out to Be United Importers, who held a trade show up at their facilities in Connecticut. And they had a bunch of their brewers in town and a bunch of great sampling, and it was a really great time to get to know these people.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, fantastic. Be United is doing amazing things. They have a wonderful facility. They are bringing beer over in tanks, kegging them on site, so they are promising delivering the freshest beer that they possibly can. Some very unusual and delicious beers. They also have a program called Zymator, where they're taking some of that beer and barrel aging it in a variety of barrels, and absolutely delicious return. They're also just built a greenhouse, planted a vineyard, as well as a garden, so that they can infuse some of these with their, you know, house-grown botanicals. So anyway, Matthias Niedhart is the owner and head of Be United. His son Ben is heading the lab, and
he does all
the barrel aging. Yep. And all kinds of stuff. So it's absolutely an amazing facility. They're going to put a brewery in. But anyway, they're doing amazing things. It's very, very inspirational to all of us as brewers and also craft beer consumers.
And a lot of the breweries that they deal with are relatively small. So if you see anything with the name or with the Be United stamp, get it.
Yep.
Delicious.
Probably going to be really delicious. So we were lucky enough. We got a couple interviews. We're going to play one for you now. So tonight we're talking about creative brewing. So using unusual ingredients, inspiration, of course, bacteria and yeast mixes. And we're going to start it with an interview that we recorded yesterday with the couple behind Lover Beer. So it's Walter Louvrier and his wonderful wife, Elena.
Walter Louvrier.
So let's go.
We are located in the northwest near Turin, that's closer to the French border. We are in Marentino, it's a very short, very small town, 20 kilometers from Tunis.
And what type of brewing system do you have? Like how big is your brewing system? And
Okay, our brew house is for 10 hectoliters. Mm-hmm. Is small for American reality, but for Italy is a medium. In Italy, maximum is 30 hectoliters, and typically sometimes is two hectoliters.
Right, very small.
But we produce very special beer, and we have the problem for us is the cellar, the number of fermenter, because we have a very long time of fermentation, and 10 hectoliters is very good for us. Is okay, is enough.
Okay. So you guys brought 6 beers with you today. We tasted all of them earlier, and we're especially interested in, you have 2 beers that you brew with grapes. So what is the first one?
The first one is Birbera. It was the first beer that we produced when we was born as brewery at the end of 2009. And it's quite particular because it's spontaneous fermentation. Our basic philosophy is trying to join our culture, that our winemaker culture, to the culture of beer, especially from the north of Europe and especially from Belgium. So the inspiration for this beer is to lambic, but we are in Italy, we are in Piedmont. ferment. And so we started the spontaneous fermentation using the wall grapes. The grapes is Barbera grapes, and fermentation starts from the yeast that's present on the skin of the grapes.
Okay. Now, how do you brew the beer and then you add the grapes?
No, we started to make a natural wine. Mm-hmm. We pressed and steamed the grapes, and after is started the fermentation, we adding the wort of beer.
Ah, okay.
And fermented all together.
Okay.
This is a very different to a spontaneous fermentation from the Pajottenland, from the Lambic area. But I think it's a very original process for have a spontaneous beer from spontaneous fermentation.
And you didn't add any beer yeast?
No,
all the yeast from the grapes?
Process we don't add in. Also in re-fermentation is the yeast is the original on the skin. Survived during the fermentation.
That's fantastic.
And how long of a process does that take to ferment?
Typically, we have 4 months. At the end of the years, the first day of the next year, we are because we can produce this beer only at the vintage time in October when the Barbera grapes is ready matured at the harvest, and after 4 months. Is ready to bottling and kegging, but we wait in other 4 months before to start to sell in bottle. And this kind of beer have a very long life because the sour, the acidity is good for aging. And we have tried the 2011, 2010, 2009, and when we go to the past, it's better than the younger. Okay.
Yeah. Now, what you have a second beer that you also brew with grapes? So
but it's completely different. The process is the opposite. The name of this beer is Duva beer. Duva in Italian means with grapes. But it's not a spontaneous fermentation, so we inoculate the yeast of the beer and then we add the grapes must. And we use a different kind of grapes, that's a Freisa, that's a typical from the era around Turin.
When did you add that must?
We added when it started the fermentation of the wort of the beer. And for us, for this kind of beer, is very important, the main actor is the yeast for beer, not wild, not yeast for wine, because we want to have a sweetness at the end, and this is a particular process inspired to sweet wine, okay? And but in this case, the sweet is balanced to the sour of the grapes. And it's very very different to Birbera, because Birbera is dry and this is a little sweet.
That's very fun.
Yeah.
The last beer is with plums.
Yeah.
And the plums, do we do the same way as the last spring beer? Or?
Plums are particular plums.
What's the name of the beer?
Birbrugna. Brugna in dialect means plums. And we usually joke with the names of the beers using English, Italian, and our dialects. And the inspiration is to Belgian Creek, but instead of using cherish, we use ramassin. Ramassin is a particular small, sweet, and wild plums that you can find only in the area around Turin. And for the fermentation, husband?
Okay. It's not a spontaneous fermentation, but we use the main actor of the spontaneous fermentation, Brettanomyces, Lactobacillus, Pediococcus, and Saccharomyces, of course. And they started the fermentation and maturation for 12 months in barrique. During this time, for me, the name is Bière du Lambic, but it's the only name for the brewer. For the brewing. And after 12 months, we add in, at the harvest time, we add in the plums, some very special plums, Ramassine, for 1 month. And this is our sour fruit aged ale.
And those are, you add them in the barrel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So how long does that beer take? So it takes 12 months.
12 months and 1 month of, with plums. Okay.
And then you bottle that and bottle condition for?
Yes, it's bottle condition and also kegging. And maybe this year, I hope we can have for the U.S. market also in draft.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much. Your beers are absolutely delicious.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
They are absolutely delicious. These are great beers. I'm going to introduce right now, we have a guest in the studio. I want to be able to, we can all comment on this, but I have a friend that we just met at 508 Gastro Brewery, Sean McGinty, who's in town from Florida.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, thanks for coming. These were awesome beers, and what they're doing. One thing I really like is how they're really showcasing these grapes. When people think about Italy, you think about grapes, and they're doing it in a very creative blending way, where they
they're using local products.
Absolutely.
So, very
and
cool.
One reason why we have Sean McGinty with us today is because he does a lot of things with local products, such as his Florida citrus Berliner Weiss. Tell us about that beer, man.
So. A couple of years ago, this Florida Weiss trend started in the Tampa area, and you know it's started with a guy Doug out at Peg's Brewing. He was an assistant brewer at Cigar City, and he likes to make funky beer. Justin Strang, also at Seventh Son, makes a ton of Berliner Weisses, and what they're doing is they're grabbing the Caribbean fruits and the Florida fruits, and they're infusing the beers with these flavors, so you get the tartness of a Berliner, and then maybe some grapefruit or some lemon or some orange.
How did you do it? I mean, did you do an infusion and then blend after the Berliner Weiss? And
I made a syrup. So I happened to have family in Leesburg, Florida, which is a huge citrus part of Florida, and we've got wild orange trees all over the county, all over the city. So My daughter was up there for spring break, and her and my mom went and picked sour oranges for me. They got two trash bags full.
Nice.
And when I went to pick her up, I brought them home with me. I zested a half dozen, I juiced a dozen, and I reduced it on the stove until it became a syrup.
Nice.
And I added it to the keg, and got it to where I thought it was wasn't overpowering, but it definitely lent some sourness because they're native sour stock Florida oranges. Florida oranges aren't actually sweet. They're a hybrid that was crossbred with California oranges. So they're sour oranges, reduced them down, added into the keg. So you get the sourness from the Berliner, and then you get this sweet kind of citrus sourness from the syrup. And I'll bottle some up and mail some to you.
I think you should do that. I think we would really like that at the show.
So let me ask you this. Because it's something that's come up before. So how did you determine how much syrup to add? So I think everybody has a little different technique.
Yeah, so for me, it really depends on the beer I'm doing. Like, I didn't think that I could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do the entire garbage bag, but some of them had already started to rot, and I couldn't use any of those. So I ended up with about half of what I had. I had about two dozen oranges after I threw away everything that had gone bad. And my business partners, those of us that are starting a brewery together.
That's right, you're starting a brewery called, not Suntan. It is Suntan.
No, Sunburn.
Sunburn.
Sorry, Brewing.
Sunburn. Give me a hint right there.
You are
from Florida.
30 hours in the car get you this awesome elbow sunburn. So, I was going back and forth with them because I'm like, I'm just going to do all 24 oranges. And they're like, no, dude, don't do that. You're not going to be able to drink it. So, I cooked the syrup until the syrup got to a flavor that I wanted, and then I just added all of it to the beer and crossed my fingers and hoped it turned out good. With some of the other spices that I work with, I'll make a tea out of them and see where it gets me, because putting fresh curry leaves into a beer, you can end up with something that's more of a marinade than something that you want to drink. So, when I'm working with fruit, I look at it this way. I know I'm not going to make a blueberry, sea paw Sea Dog Ale. You know, it's not going to be overpowering and sweet and sticky, because I'm not going to put 24 pounds of stuff into my kettle.
Right.
Right.
You know, so a lot of it's trial by error with fruit, and then everything else is measured.
We're going to talk more to you yes. About your processes to these regards in just a moment. We're going to take
hear
a quick
about
break.
Those curry leaves.
Yeah, man.
So we'll be back.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org.
We're here with our friend Sean McGinty from Tampa, Florida, who has a brewery called Sunburn Brewing Company.
A brewery in planning.
Right now you're brewing 10 gallons at a time, correct?
10 gallons at a time. I built a Brutus 10
oh, sweet.
System.
So you have an outdoor room to do that.
I'm in Florida.
We're in New York. Yeah,
I got a driveway and a garage.
That's crazy. What are those?
A quarter acre.
Does not compute.
Yeah.
That's awesome. How long have you been brewing?
On and off for 12 years.
That's fantastic. When did you start being all crazy and using tamarind and orange?
Why?
And why?
Right
yeah,
off
why?
Off the bat.
Right off the bat. That's great.
My wife and I went on a cruise. We stopped in Grand Cayman. My mother's family is all from Cuba. And there was a guava rum in Grand Cayman. I wanted to buy a bottle of it. And they wouldn't let me do it since I'm a U.S. citizen. So when we got back, my wife got me a Mr. Beer kit and said, well, you can make guava beer because you can't distill stuff in our tub.
So did you make a guava beer just at the start?
I did. I started making a guava wheat 10 years ago, and that recipe slowly evolved. It's now actually my tamarind wheat, and the guava has found a better home in a pale ale.
Nice. So you're on the show because we were talking about, all this stuff that you're doing down there. And I was like, oh, man, you got to meet Mary. It's crazy. Like, and so you guys have just met now, but Mary's gotten me into a lot of these things. And also, we had a tamarind conversation because the people that own 508 have a place on the British Virgin Isles. And they're like, we can get you a lot of tamarind our next visit. And so how do you use the tamarind?
So,
and what do you find is most successful with that? It's a really crazy flavor that I love.
It's a really crazy flavor. My buddies from Jamaica call it poor man's sour candy. So I use it in two different forms. When I can get it fresh, it's fresh. I drop it in 10 minutes before my boil's done, and then I transfer all of it to primary because the heat's broken it down enough to where it's going to start fermenting really well.
So you leave all the vegetable matter in there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I strip the shell off of it. I toss it in giant mesh bag, and then as I'm going through my chiller, I'm dropping it into the primary fermentation.
Fascinating. Yeah.
That works when I've got fresh tamarind. Not easy to find unless you're all the way out in Miami. So I found Goya makes a frozen tamarind pulp.
Yep.
And there's no additives. There's no preservatives. It's just frozen pulp. So I'll go and pick up a case of that stuff, and I'll add it all in secondary when I'm working with a frozen puree, because I don't need to worry about sanitation.
Right.
So I don't need to boil it.
All so then secondary. You're getting like the you're getting like total. Total freshness within
total freshness.
Secondary.
Yeah.
So when you are you thawing it first, I assume.
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. You know, I'll.
Do you need to thaw it? I mean, it's already up there. It's going to
slowly
thaw.
No, but you know, I'm using better bottles, so.
Where you got to get it through that that lid.
Got to get it. Got to get it through the neck there.
Yeah.
If I was using buckets, I'd just toss in the frozen sheet of tamarind and let it thaw. And you know, I leave a little bit of yeast, and when I go to secondary in those beers, to let it grab onto a little bit of the fruit sugars and ferment that out. But I don't want it all to ferment out because then the flavor.
And how long are you leaving it in secondary, or would you recommend people do that if they're using tamarind or something like it?
Tamarind, guava, yeah, any of your Caribbean fruits, papaya. I make a papaya cider for my wife.
Guanabana.
And your wife is gluten free.
Gluten free.
She's like,
she got celiac. So
yeah.
But I leave it in at least a week, sometimes more. It depends on the style.
And then do you taste? I mean, like when you first started developing these recipes, did you taste kind of as you went along and determine?
Yeah, I've got a wine thief, and I go in there and I pull tastes. That's I'm looking forward to going home and pulling tastes from my red wine fermented double. Awesome.
That's exciting. So red wine, you used red wine yeast,
yes.
You said, right?
Lavender.
Yeah.
So powdered red wine yeast.
Mm-hmm. The dry red wine yeast.
Yep. Reconstituted it.
I'm really inspired by Valter's, you know, red wine beers.
Yeah.
And, or grape beers that we were talking about.
So you said you took half. So you made this a traditional kind of Belgian double style beer,
yep.
And you took half of it and put it on the red wine yeast.
Correct, because you can't use wine yeast and beer yeast in the same fermenter.
Right.
Wine yeast eats
beer
yeast.
Yeah.
It devours it, destroys it. And
so how does that beer using wine yeast? What's different? I mean, what do you observe and kind of?
Well,
time it takes, that kind of thing.
Time's actually shorter. The wine yeast, I mean, as within an hour, it was just krausing like crazy. And in 3 days, it was done.
That's awesome. Yep.
Fell out of suspension, dropped to the bottom, and my Trappist yeast was still going on the other half of the batch. And I'm like, okay, well, wait for that to finish. And then cold crash everything.
And so then you're going to blend those.
I'm going to blend them. So it's for a competition. Three Palms Brewery out in Tampa is doing a double competition because that was the beer they went live with.
Awesome.
But they haven't made it since. So
it's their throwback competition?
Yeah.
So everybody's making this beer. Are they all doing this process where they're blending kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
He asked for the most traditional BJCP double that you could come out with, and I told him I couldn't do it. So. it's hard for me to brew to style, so we'll see where I place in it. If not, I know I'm going to sit down and make a beer with them, you know, anyways. But it'd be nice to win.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I'll be interested to hear how it comes out.
I will bottle that along with some of the Florida Vice.
Yeah, please do.
So tell us. So you were talking about earlier we were talking about you have an Indian Pale Ale, Indian with an N at the end.
Yes.
That you do with the curry leaves.
Yep.
So tell us about that beer.
I'm a huge British beer fan. So what I like to do is take traditional British styles and, you know, put a twist on them. I did a year of culinary college and worked for two different five-star chefs, so I approach things a little differently. And what I did with this beer, it was a 10-gallon batch, never made it before in my life, and fresh green curry leaves, fresh green cardamom pods, fresh turmeric. And outside of that, it is a by-the-book British pale ale, IPA, whatever you'd like to call it, Maris Otter, EKG. And I added all of that to the boil right about the 10-15-minute mark.
Okay.
10-15 minutes before end of boil.
Did you add any more after that?
No.
For any aroma? So just all, okay.
And
was
that total guessing on your how much quantities when you first did it?
I make a lot of Indian food, so I wasn't totally guessing.
Yeah.
I also did a chai milk stout, and I made the chai spice, ground up all 29 spices.
Nice.
And, because, as one does. You know.
Yeah. And I looked at that, and I was like, I'm making a 10-gallon batch, and well, just toss it in. And I brought that. I actually brought the Indian Pale Ale with me as well.
Cool. So we're going to be tasting that shortly.
But not on air. We're actually going to Brooklyn Bruisers.
That's true. So we're going to, Chris is going to be speaking at the Brooklyn Bruisers meeting, which meets the first Monday of every month at Browery Lane, Greenpoint.
That's right.
Fantastic.
Local homebrew club.
Yep.
If you live in Greenpoint or Williamsburg,
or Long Island City. That's the place to go.
Absolutely.
Yep. So we'll be there. And so we're going to open some of those there.
Sure.
Maybe a little bit here. So what do you recommend for beginners? I mean, so you're coming from a culinary background.
Yeah.
So you have a better idea. If you cook a lot, you know, you have a better idea of the spices.
Yeah.
But what do you recommend for beginners? Do you have any tips?
Local. Find something fresh. Find something local. Find something you really enjoy. And then write out a recipe and then throw it away. And then do it again, and then ask yourself, if I had a beer that was stylistically sound without this ingredient, what would this add?
Right.
And that's kind of how I approach it. You know, if this beer was stylistically sound, how would this enhance it? What, you know, what flavor of am I looking to get out of it? And if you're not sure, I always go with make a tea.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's trying new wood to age beers on, whether it's new fruit, new spices, new anything, make a tea. See what flavors you're going to get from it when it's been heated.
Right. Now, do you ever do cold teas?
Yeah. Yeah.
More delicate ingredients?
Especially with things I'm going to add into secondary fermentation because there's not that element of heat to mm-hmm. break down and release oils. So anything that's going to the secondary, yeah, I'll do a cold brewed tea. I'll just, you know, I do a New Orleans stout every year for my dad. Roasted chicory, French press coffee. And I do cold press coffee with it. And every time I change the beans that I'm using, I'll do a cold press pot, leave it in the fridge for 24 hours and see what it tastes like.
I have a question since you're culinary trained. I had a failed experiment happen the other day. I wanted to add mustard seeds to my blonde and as part of my hair dye series. So one Belgian blonde I threw some hibiscus into, one I threw black currant, and that the sweetness really kind of really balanced everything else out. The other one I wanted to like spice up with mustard and tried to make a tea with mustard, and it just ended up vegetable, just like it was horrible. And so I didn't throw it. I didn't end up doing that one. But how would you get? How would you recommend getting mustard spice in a tea?
So the same process I use when I'm adding black peppers or anything that's a hard seed, I throw them in the pan and with some olive oil. I cook them till they start to smoke. As soon as they start to smoke, I'll throw them in the kettle.
Okay.
Because once they hit that smoking level, they're releasing all of their oils. So, you know, peppercorns. You know,
yeah.
Even, you can do it with, I'm drawing a blank.
Great. Any kind paradise. Of seed like that,
any
right?
Yeah, I mean, any kind of seed. Grains of paradise. Kind of,
yeah.
Anything
probably like
that.
Cumin.
Cumin seeds. Like coriander.
Coriander,
yep.
Yeah.
That's coriander was what I was reaching for.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you do that for your wits then with coriander?
Yeah, actually.
Oh, nice.
When I make a wit, I will I'll throw my coriander seeds in there, and I bring them up to smoking, and then I toss them in.
You do that with oil or just straight up on the pan?
Depends on what I'm doing. With coriander, no oil. I don't want to add any more oil than
right,
the seeds
that's
are.
Right. Yeah. That's fine.
So.
It's probably something to play with. The other thing, I mean, alcohol. We don't have time to talk about alcohol extractions, but I would suspect that some of these things could also be done as an alcohol extraction.
Yeah, tincture.
Yeah,
yep.
Especially if you wanted to add them at bottling or kegging or in secondary or what. Yep. Well, bottling or kegging particularly, and you didn't want to deal with oil or anything.
Yep.
Well, dude, thank you so much for being here. I find you truly inspiring, dude. Seriously, absolutely.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Anytime, if you're in town on Monday, you want to join us, even no matter if we have other guests, pop on in.
Yeah.
That, I'll remember that.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, just show up.
And hopefully you guys out there listening have found this inspirational using, you know, creative brewing styles, creative ingredients. Really look at what is grown around local. Go to your green market or your local kind of international groceries. We have a great grocery near us that we can
Food
get
bizarre.
All kinds of stuff. Yep. Including frozen tamarind paste and guanabana and soursop and everything else. So look for unusual ingredients and you'll try it out. You might find something that you really like.
And stay tuned for Sunburn Brewing Company.
Yep. So we also want to encourage you, if you are enjoying this show and other shows on Heritage Radio Network, This is a not-for-profit station. Please support Heritage Radio Network. Basic membership starts at $60, $25 if you're a student. For homebrewers out there, you get a 5% discount at Brooklyn Homebrew and Bitter Nesters, as well as a dollar off drafts at Jimmy's Number 43. They also have a very special event coming up on Sunday, May 19th. At Roberta's, where we always are live from. It's called Hawaiian Underground. It's got food from everybody from Delaney Barbecue to Heritage Foods to Court Street Groceries to Gramercy Tavern, Brooklyn Grain. I mean, amazing food. Beer from Empire Brewing Company. There's going to be a DJ, a pig roast, a campfire, everything. Tickets range from $95 to $150 for VIP, but included, which, you know, it might be, you might think that's steep, but it includes a your membership, which is $60. So if you buy a $95 general admission ticket, you're getting $60 membership for the year, and, you know, tons of great food, beer, and you also know that you're supporting a great cause. So thank you guys for supporting us, and tune in next week
for episode 25.
Yeah, we're going to talk about table beers with some of our favorite homebrewers that are doing very low alcohol beers under 3.5%, some of them.
With very big flavors.
Yep. So thank you guys for listening. We're on heritageradionetwork.org and archived on our iTunes, and we will be talking to you next week, 7 p.m. Monday night.
For Man About It.
Man About It.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.